3, and why should we care about it specifically?
Good question. You know, I had the same reaction when I first learned about it back in about 2007, 2008, and I saw a documentary on it. And helium-3, Michael, is an isotope of helium. You know, helium goes into children's balloons, and it's that gas that we breathe in to make our voices sound funny.
Right, right.
But to say it's an isotope means it has one fewer neutron than regular helium. And this missing neutron enables it to be combined with other helium molecule, helium-3 molecules, in a process known as nuclear fusion, where you're fusing together matter. And that's different from the fission that we currently have on Earth today, where we're splitting plutonium or uranium to produce energy.
Right.
Now, the point is that helium-3 is very rare on Earth, but it's in abundance on the moon. And, you know, what I discovered was in 2007, I saw this documentary about lunar mining and the moon, and the proposal was that we need to go to the moon to mine helium-3, bring it back to Earth to produce energy. And to give your listeners an idea of the power of helium-3, one ton of it is the equivalent energy of 50 million, that's with an M, barrels of crude oil.
Wow.
25 tons of this stuff would be enough to power the entire United States for a year. So it's profoundly powerful, and this caught my interest. And I worked it into my latest mystery novel, A Truth Stranger Than Fiction.
You know, I was doing the reading on this and kind of getting some backstory in it. I mean, I see that scientists have basically explained and said, look, this is they feel that this could be one of the best alternative energy sources available to us. And whether that, I think, is through the, you know, kind of the peak oil thing or something else, looking at least for alternatives. They think it's great, but now you're talking about an enormous undertaking. I mean, we haven't been to the moon since, what, 71, 72, 73, somewhere in there? And now we're talking about, I mean, if we are entertaining this idea, we're talking about exporting that gas from the moon. So, I mean, we'd have to set up a base. I mean, this is like almost like Heinlein, right?
You're absolutely right. I mean, the thing is, it sounds like science fiction. But, you know, the more I've looked into this, there are substantial scientists who have shown that this can be done. The University of Wisconsin-Madison has a fusion technology institute, and they have successfully fused helium-3 molecules. So this isn't some pie-in-the-sky process. It can actually be done. The company Lockheed Martin Aerospace Company is currently working on a compact fusion reactor that will fit in the back of a pickup truck. It wouldn't be powered by helium-3, but the idea is that this very small, almost generator-like device would provide energy for 80,000 people.
Wow.
And, you know, the thing is, I've found, Michael, that one conservative estimate is that this would be a trillion, with a T, dollar undertaking. It's not going to be cheap. But the thing is, I'm not saying that this is something that the U.S. government should just take on alone and tax our citizens up the wazoo just to fund this. This needs to be a multinational and multi-corporate effort. I think the projected costs are so big that it's going to require corporate investment. And, you know, the thing is, Michael, that, you know, oil is going to run out. And I don't understand why the fossil fuels industry isn't looking to this and investing in this right now.
We're talking with Chris Orcutt, author, about helium-3 and whether it could provide us our power that we need for the next, 5 or 10,000 years. there are companies, there are some hope, in, I guess, in this kind of way, if you look at it from the long term. You know, you've got Elon Musk, you've got SpaceX, you've got, you know, you've got all these different companies that are starting to, you know, Virgin Galactic, that are starting to reach into the private space industry. So you could see how some of these things could be possible as we move forward. And do this, but when you start talking about an investment of over $1 trillion, I mean, there has to be the payback on that would have to be enough to make it happen. What do they believe that the overall savings or the return on investment of something like that could be, in the 10, 20, 30, 50 year period? What are they? What kind of numbers are we talking about?
My research has shown, Michael, that analysts seem to agree that it would take about 20 years for a return on investment. And, you know, part of those costs would include getting back to the moon, establishing a lunar mining colony there, and much of that work might be done with robots, Liam 3 back to Earth. But then there's the cost of creating fusion reactors. But the point is that within 20 years, we could be receiving 90% of our energy needs through helium-3. So it's a, you know, it's a really exciting prospect. And, you know, this, again, is not a pie-in-the-sky thing. As you mentioned, there are lots of companies out there doing it. One company in the Silicon Valley, Moon Express, is headed by a billionaire who wants to go back to the moon, not just for helium-3, but for the rare earth metals that are there and necessary in the electronics industry.
That's all going to work out fine until the environmentalists start screaming about preserving the craters on the moon. I'm telling you right
now. You raise a good point. I mean, but there has to be a balance between the desire of if environmentalists to keep things pristine and for there to, you know, for us to have an economy.
What, for society to progress forward? I mean, that's kind of what has to happen. I mean, these things have to be used in a certain way. I think that's the difference between conservationists and preservationists. I mean, conservationists utilize it to the best of their ability while trying to conserve it as best they can. Preservationists just want to leave it under glass just the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the thing is, our history has been one of any time we've had a radical development in technology, particularly when it comes to energy, that has created a serious boom in the economy. I mean, for centuries, we were powered by wood. Then the industrial age was powered by coal. And then oil came along, and this waste product, gasoline, at the right time as it, you know, the internal combustion engine comes in, and suddenly we have automobiles, and we have an entire industry related to that.
Right.
Helium-3, I think, in what I'm seeing scientists projecting, is helium-3 has that possibility of creating a radical shift and boom in the economy.
Well,
I mean, it would create thousands of jobs.
And we're seeing, of course, more discussions now and more companies. I mean, was it Planetary Resources? I know it was James Cameron's baby. It came together. It's a company that's been formed to try and look at the feasibility of asteroid mining and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this science fiction is really becoming closer and closer every day, like I said, with SpaceX and other private industries starting to move forward. This really could be the next great frontier. Chris Orcutt, author, appreciate you coming on and talking with us today. This is some kind of cool stuff. Now, I don't know if it'll happen, you know, soon or even in my lifetime, but I think that this is probably the way we're eventually going to have to go. I appreciate you coming on board and talking with us today, Chris. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, Michael. Thank you, and thanks to your listeners. Have a great day.
We've got links up to the website where you can check out Chris's latest book and more. Just go to Facebook or KBWire.com. Chris Orcutt, our guest. Back with more. The Michael Duke Show continues. Liz.